Welcome to As It Is, a 30-minute program designed for English learners. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English. We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world.
Belgian security forces are continuing to search for a man seen with two suicide bombers in the airport and metro attacks in Brussels, Belgium. At least 31 people were killed and 271 wounded. The Islamic State terrorist group is claiming responsibility for the attacks. A U.S. official told VOA there is no reason to doubt the claim. Belgian federal prosecutor Frederik van Loo confirmed that two of the attackers were brothers, Khalid and Ibrahim El-Bahrawi. On Tuesday, Belgian police released a photograph of three men taken from closed-circuit television at the airport. Van Loo said Ibrahim and an unidentified man, both wearing dark clothing, died in the airport attacks. Security forces are now looking for the third person in the photo. The man was wearing a white jacket with a black hat. Earlier, Belgian media reported the man was 25-year-old Nejem Alashraoui and that he had been arrested. The report was later withdrawn, and Van Loo confirmed no one has been arrested in connection with the attacks. Van Loo said Ibrahim also left a will in a trash can at the airport, and Khalid, the other brother, was the suicide bomber on a metro train at the Melbeek station. Belgian broadcaster RTBF says the El-Bahrawi brothers were known to police and had criminal records, but no history of terrorist activity. It said Khalid El-Bahrawi used a false name to rent an apartment in Brussels that police raided last week. They also found weapons and a fingerprint for Salah Abdeslam, the main suspect in the deadly bombings in Paris, November 13th. He was arrested Friday. On Wednesday, people in Brussels honored the victims of the bombings with a minute of silence. Then they began clapping in a defiant show of solidarity. One person yelled, "Long live the Belgians," which caused more clapping. Officials said there would be no flights into or out of the airport at least through Thursday. In a statement, they said, "Until we can assess the damage, we are unable to confirm when operations at the airport can be resumed." Next, Christopher Jones Cruz reports on how United States presidential candidates have reacted to the Brussels attacks.
Muslim Americans and rights groups denounced U.S. presidential candidate Ted Cruz's call for increased surveillance of Muslim neighborhoods after the attacks in Brussels. Cruz said police should be permitted to patrol and secure Muslim neighborhoods before they become radicalized. The Republican senator from Texas praised New York City's program of surveillance on Muslim neighborhoods after 9/11 attacks in the U.S. The program was discontinued after complaints of religious and racial profiling. The Council on American-Islamic Relations condemned Cruz's statement. It said his comment sends an alarming message to American Muslims who increasingly fear for their future in this nation. The Anti-Defamation League is an American organization that fights anti-Semitism. The group said demonizing all Muslims is a misguided and counterproductive response to the terrorist threat. And it compared Cruz's approach to the internment of Japanese Americans during World War II. Businessman Donald Trump, the leading Republican presidential candidate, told CNN that he supports Cruz's idea 100%. After the terrorist attacks in San Bernardino, California, last November, Trump called for a temporary ban on Muslims from other countries entering the United States. Trump also repeated his call for American investigators to be permitted to use stronger questioning methods. He said Belgium could have kept the bombings from happening if it had tortured a suspect in last year's terrorist attacks in Paris after he was arrested last week. Ohio Governor John Kasich is another Republican presidential candidate. He told MSNBC that President Obama should return to the U.S. from his trip to Cuba and Argentina. He ought to work with the heads of state around the world. They ought to assemble teams, and they need to examine these vulnerabilities we have. Because without effective human intelligence, without coordination and cooperation among all the civilized nations, we get these gaps, and these gaps get exploited by these people who are intent on killing civilized people. Democratic candidate and former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton told CNN that terrorists are developing ways of building bombs that are hard to discover. She said, "We have to continually be learning and getting ahead of these thugs and criminals in order to prevent them doing what they did in Brussels." Clinton called for the United States and European nations to increase the amount of information they share. In a statement, Democratic candidate Senator Bernie Sanders said the attacks were another cowardly attempt to terrorize innocent civilians. He called the attacks a brutal reminder that the international community must come together to destroy ISIS. This type of barbarism cannot be allowed to continue. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz.
Next, Mario Ritter brings us this week's Personal Technology Report.
The technology company Apple announced a new smaller-sized iPhone on Monday at a press event in Cupertino, California. Apple head Tim Cook said customers had asked that the company continue making 4-inch products. He said the new iPhone SE satisfies that demand. It is the same size as the iPhone 5 and 5S. But the SE includes the better hardware of the most recent iPhone, the 6S. And Apple is offering the iPhone SE for a lower price. An iPhone SE with 16 gigabytes of storage will cost about $400. One with 64 gigabytes will be about $100 more. The iPhone SE shares the same design and materials as the 5 and 5S. However, The new model adds a color choice, rose gold. Last fall, Apple introduced the iPad Pro, its largest iPad ever. At 12.9 inches, or 32.766 centimeters, the iPad Pro screen is as big as that of some laptop computers. At the event on Monday, Apple announced a smaller version of the iPad Pro with a screen measuring 9.7 inches or 24.638 centimeters. That is the size of the original iPad screen. The iPad Pro is designed for possible use as a laptop computer. The device has powerful hardware and storage capacity up to 256 gigabytes. This iPad Pro works with Apple's stylus, called the Pencil. It also works with the so-called Smart Keyboard, which also serves as a cover. The screen of the iPad Pro has been improved to make it easier to read in bright light, such as sunlight. The cameras are also more powerful, both front and back, to take better photos. The iPad Pro will cost between $579 and a little over $1,000. iOS, the operating system for the iPhone and iPad, received an update this week to version 9.3. New features include the ability to protect notes using a password or your fingerprint. Apple also introduced Night Shift, a mode that changes the brightness of the screen based on the time of day and location of the device. Night Shift reduces the amount of blue light that the screen displays at night, as blue light has been shown to interfere with sleep. Apple is making getting an Apple Watch a bit easier by cutting the price. The price of the least expensive watch has been reduced by about $50 to $299. I'm Mario Ritter.
The West Potomac Park in Washington, D.C., lies just west of the National Mall. It is home to some of Washington's most iconic sites, like the Jefferson Memorial, the Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial, and the Tidal Basin. But the park's most famous attraction? Cherry blossoms. Thousands of cherry trees bloom around the waters of the Tidal Basin, which reflect the tree's images. The basin was created in the late 1800s to prevent the Potomac River from flooding. These pink and white flowers serve as a symbol of international friendship. The original cherry trees were a gift from Japan. On March 26, 1912, more than 3,000 cherry trees arrived in Washington. Most were planted around the Tidal Basin, but cherry trees were also planted near the Washington Monument and the White House. Mike Litterst is a spokesperson for the U.S. National Park Service. The Park Service maintains West Potomac Park and helps protect the cherry trees.
It's this wonderful gift that's over 100 years old now that, if you will, it's the gift that keeps on giving. The 1912 gift from the people of Japan has grown to this 3,800 trees.
The cherry blossoms also serve as a symbol of the beginning of springtime. The trees burst with colors of soft pink and white.
The blossoming of the cherry blossoms every spring is sort of the great springtime celebration, not only in the District of Columbia, but throughout the United States.
Every year, Washington celebrates the arrival of spring with a 2-week cherry blossom festival. More than 1.5 million people from around the world visit the nation's capital during the festival. They all hope to see the cherry trees at their peak bloom. Park officials define peak bloom as the period when 70% of Washington's most common cherry tree variety, the Yoshino trees, are blooming. Yoshino cherry trees are one of 12 types of cherry trees in Washington. Peak bloom lasts several days each year. Experts begin making peak bloom predictions in February. Visitors make their travel plans to Washington based on these predictions. Some years, the early guesses are correct. Last year, officials correctly predicted the peak bloom 6 weeks in advance. But this year, unpredictable weather in March in Washington has made guessing the peak bloom difficult. Peak bloom dates have changed many times. Carl Feasley and his family visited the tidal basin one day before the 2016 peak bloom was set to begin on March 23rd. It was his first time to see the cherry blossoms.
Coming from Buffalo, New York, where it's been winter for even a mild winter this year, but winter for the past 5 months or so it seems. It's just nice to be out in the sunshine and to see evidence of spring all over.
Virginia Walsh is a Washington, D.C. local. She said she comes down to the tidal basin several times every spring to enjoy the cherry blossoms.
I always try to come early, the peak, and then a couple days later. It's normally 3 times a year. I just love this place.
The cherry blossoms may signal the start of spring in Washington, but they have also become a worldwide symbol of Washington itself. Bo Wen moved to Washington from China 7 years ago. He comes to the tidal basin every year during the Cherry Blossom Festival.
It's just famous. I mean, like, everywhere you can see, like, the Washington, D.C. Cherry Blossom Festival, like, every year, in, like, Twitter or, like, Instagram, I mean, I just, in the world, everywhere, like, people just know that, yeah.
I'm Ashley Thompson.
In parts of the South Pacific, some people have never heard of the Internet. Many people have limited access to learning resources. But one group of students and a professor from California Polytechnic State University have developed a device to help with that problem. John Russell has the story.
Alexis Cullen works as a volunteer in Vanuatu, one of the Peace Corps' most remote postings. In the village where she works, called Naviso, some people have never heard of the Internet. That is not uncommon in the South Pacific, where some people have limited access to learning resources.
Nobody's ever seen the Internet. People don't know what the Internet is. Some of them are very separated out from what the rest of the world is doing.
And without the Internet, says Cullen, people in these areas are falling behind. It is not likely they will be able to access the Internet in the near future.
As you sit and you wait, there are just villages that get further and further behind. And how can you ever communicate or be part of a global society if people are waiting for you to get connected?
To help with that problem, Dr. Laura Hossman, a professor at California Polytechnic State University, and her students developed a mobile library. It is called Solar Spell. Dr. Hossman says she wanted to get educational content to rural places. She wanted to create a digital library that would not be ruined in bad weather. The Solar Spell unit, which is powered by the sun, creates a Wi-Fi hotspot. Although it does not use the internet, it creates a similar experience.
So any device that can connect to the internet can connect to our library,
Hossman says.
And it seems like they're on the internet, even though they're not. So it's an offline website that really feels like you're online.
It lets users practice using the internet on a smaller scale. Each Solar Spell unit comes with a memory card, a small plug-in device that holds the educational content. It only uses a small amount of space and does not rely on power cables or electricity networks. Hossman and her students worked hard to find content to put in the library. They wanted to choose content appealing to people who live in rural areas in the South Pacific, such as Vanuatu and the Federated States of Micronesia.
I wanted the students to be able to see themselves in the curriculum.
The Solar Spell team has partnered with the Peace Corps in Vanuatu and the Federated States of Micronesia. The Peace Corps has used about 50 Solar Spell units. The village where Alexis Cullen works, Neviso, has one unit. Alexis says that about 200 students have used it. Hossman says Solar Spell units could be used in other countries in the South Pacific. Gabriel Krishak is the Information and Communication Technologies for Development Program Officer at the Peace Corps. He says some technologies are appropriate to some areas, but not to others.
I think one of the big challenges that we have is that there's this tendency to want to have like a one-size-fits-all solution. And while it's really tempting to go down that road, it never works. And I have yet to see a place where you can have like, you know, one thing that works for everyone.
The challenge, he says, is balancing new technologies with what people need.
How can I take what you guys have done here, like with Solar Spell is a really good example, and, you know, translate that to, you know, a post in East Africa or something like that?
I'm John Russell.
This is What's Trending Today. Batman vs. Superman, Dawn of Justice, is a movie a lot of people are excited about. You have Superman. You have Batman. Even Wonder Woman is in the movie. Actor Ben Affleck plays Batman. Since the Batman movie series started in 1989, movies with Batman have sold almost $2 billion of tickets in the U.S. That is according to the website Box Office Mojo. The same site says since 1978, the six Superman movies have sold over $800 million in tickets. So the thinking goes, putting the two characters together should result in a big movie. But what happens if critics do not like it? We will find out on Thursday night when the film comes out in the U.S. Some early showings have produced disappointing reviews. Some critics say the 2.5-hour film is too long. One critic from the magazine Us Weekly calls it 151 minutes of gloom and doom. Another critic, Michael Phillips from the Chicago Tribune, says, "Humankind deserves a better blockbuster." The headline of his article is "Yawn of Justice." That is a play on words based on the movie's title, Dawn of Justice. Phillips writes about a scene with the famous Batmobile car and calls it empty noise with absolutely no rhythm. Other reviewers say the film is too serious. But not every reviewer hates the film. Scott Mendelson of Forbes says it is one of the most visually beautiful comic book movies you have ever seen. Will the negative reviews hurt the movie's profits? Will it keep fans away? So far, it looks like lots of fans ignored the reviews and purchased tickets in advance. The website The Wrap says 90% of the tickets sold for this weekend by a service called Fandango are for the movie. Earlier this week, Deadline reported the film will sell $350 million of tickets worldwide this weekend. If that happens, it will be one of the largest openings ever. And that's what's trending today. I'm Dan Friedel.
One teenager from the United States has left her small town in Oregon to move to Russia. She is following her dream of becoming a prima ballerina. Dorothy Gundy has the story.
Many young Americans dream of becoming a dancer for a prestigious ballet school. That dream is now a reality for 15-year-old Harper Ortlieb. Harper Ortlieb left her small town in Oregon to move to Moscow. She is following her dream of becoming a prima ballerina. She was accepted for study at the Bolshoi Ballet Academy. There are 721 students in the academy, and only 84 of them are foreigners. Harper is younger than most. She is also among the few to be integrated into the regular Russian program. Tatyana Galtseva is a teacher at the Bolshoi Ballet Academy. She says Harper is very gifted. "She is very gifted," said Galtseva. "She is all ballet, all inspiration." The Bolshoi took notice of Harper when she took part in a Bolshoi summer program held in Connecticut. The Bolshoi then offered her a place in its Moscow school. Harper says she feels accepted by her classmates and teachers. But she says the experience has been harder than she expected. "It's been very difficult, but with that comes strength, and with that I improve," she said. "I feel like I came here to get better, to improve, not only technically, but emotionally. So when I dance, people see something." Lane Bauman and Tim Ortlieb are Harper's parents. In September, they left their only child in Moscow. In February, Harper's mother decided to move to the Russian capital for at least the rest of the school year. She lives about two blocks from the ballet school. 17 Americans study at the Bolshoi Academy. There are 28 students from Japan. The other foreign students represent 22 different countries. Harper's teacher believes the student has what it takes to be a classical ballerina. She says, "She is extraordinarily attentive. She is always smiling. Such a sweet, wonderful girl." Harper hopes to become one of the rare foreigners to receive a diploma from the Bolshoi Ballet Academy. She has three difficult years ahead to reach her goal. I'm Dorothy Gundy.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.